Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. Kyle is here. The draft is over, Kyle. Now there's only left to review it. You know. Oh, and then I guess their careers, their whole careers.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, we did the draft cast. Hopefully, we had quite a few people hop in the chat. That was awesome.
Shout out to the John Clave. Yeah,
the John Clave. We love them both. I love my Johns. Yeah. Love anytime I can just hang out with a couple of Johns doing stuff.
Oh, the days when you and me, we would hit the town and just grab a couple of Johns
grab
and
a
go
couple
wild.
Johns. Oh, man, yeah. Anyways, no, that was good. Hopefully people have also listened to the recorded version, which successfully recorded this year. There's a record of our draft, unlike last year, so that's good. No, so the Bears draft was... You know, I don't want to say that it wasn't quite what we expected, because I don't think either of us went into this draft with any expectations because of what this draft was. And I think that factors heavily into the grades that we will probably give this draft because of that. But yeah, so I guess before we start breaking things down individually, Travis, do you feel better, worse, or the same about the Chicago Bears than you did before this draft?
It's hard to come out of a draft not feeling a little bit better about your team, right? Because you're only adding
people. I've had those drafts, though. I'm trying to think, what was a draft where I did not come out feeling any better?
It's possible to be neutral, but probably not worse, right? I would say in this one, there are a couple guys we're coming out of this with I feel really good about. And then maybe a couple guys who I'm like, why? And maybe another couple guys who I'm just kind of neutral on. So I'd say, you know... Decent draft. The only draft that I came out of this draft thinking, all right, that team really nailed it, was the Patriots. And
yeah, the Patriots.
I was like, either neutral or you fucked up.
So. The Patriots quite hilariously had the draft that I think a lot of people wanted the Bears to have, like down to the exact players. It was very funny, which, you know, happy for our boy Drake May. You know, we at the Scottcast are big fans of Drake May and wish him well. So, but before we get into the picks that were made or even the draft that has happened, I want to talk about something that was heavily rumored at the start of draft night that I thought had the stink of bullshit. And it turns out, one of your dogs is just real.
No,
real
it's my daughter is going to bed.
Okay, shit. Well, now I feel a little weird. Please do not tell my goddaughter that I called her a dog.
That's right.
No,
she'd probably take it as a compliment.
I'm sorry, but it sounded like a dog like heavily panting next to a water bowl. I was like, damn, that's a thirsty dog.
So when she goes upstairs, one of my dogs goes with her. That's her dog.
Okay,
so
a dog was involved at least.
It was a human and a dog. Yeah.
Okay.
Six legs went up the stairs.
So no, the rumor hot and heavy the day of the first round of the draft was that the Bears were making calls to move up for Ashton Jaunte. And, you know, I immediately was like, that sounds like bullshit for a couple of reasons. And I get kind of mad because a couple people were like, oh, this is Cope. You don't think Ryan Poles is stupid enough to do that? Two separate questions there, guys. Do I think Ryan Poles does some stupid shit? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And he did. His specific kind of stupid in this draft, we'll talk about it in a minute, with the fourth round pick that he made. Ryan Poles has a kind of stupid. But the kind of stupid that Ryan Poles is not is a guy who gives up a ton of draft capital to move up in the draft. I think that he's had two trade-ups in his entire life as a Bears GM. One time he traded up for Tyrique Stevenson, and then he immediately traded back down to get a fifth round pick back because he felt dirty after he did it.
Yeah.
And then he traded up back into the draft last year to get Austin Booker. And sure enough, he ended up getting the fourth round pick this year that he traded to the Bills to get Austin Booker. He got it back in this draft. The Bills and the Bears passed that fourth round pick back and forth several times. So Ryan Poles is not a guy. And I know some people have pointed out, like, oh, well, you spent a second round pick on Chase Claypool. You spent a second round pick on Montez Sweat. That is very different to me than trading up for unknown. Like, I think Ryan Poles is enough of an analytics guy when it comes to the value of draft picks, the value of first round draft picks. If he's going to trade away a draft pick, so far he has traded second round picks for young, in their prime, premium position players that were due for extensions. He was using the second round pick basically to buy an exclusive rights negotiating window with guys that he thought were entering their prime at premium positions. Now, you can be mad that he gave up a 2 for Chase Claypool and wildly biffed on that evaluation. And where Ryan Poles has mostly erred as a GM is A, in how much you tie him to Matt Eberflus and Matt Eberflus's many sins, and B, as an evaluator, he's just fucking whiffed on some free agent signings. He's just fucking whiffed on some draft picks. But he has never just traded up a haul to move up and take a position in the first round. I don't think he'd ever even consider it the way he talks about first round picks. And to give the guy some credit here, the first round picks he has used, he's drafted a quarterback, a wide receiver, an offensive tackle, and now a tight end in a draft where we'll talk about that in a second, but I think where it was fairly forgivable, even if most years number 10 on a tight end isn't. But he's mostly spent his premium picks on premium positions. There was nothing in this guy's history to indicate that he would trade up for a running back. And also...
Now, to be clear, he did try to trade up.
He called.
He said as much after the draft. He was like, oh, I called. Yeah, that the reports were correct. But... basically, you heard during the draft cast, if you listen to that, once we saw what the price to move up was for Jacksonville, to move up only 3 picks, we knew that was it for Ryan Poles. And he said as much after the draft. He was once I made the call and I saw how much it was going to cost, we were done trading up in the draft. We were thinking about trading down.
Yeah. So what I have heard from a pretty good source is that at no point were the second round picks either of them on the table, which is to say that there was never a series. And so that's why I don't even count.
Yeah.
I don't even. And it leaked that, like, the Bears were trying to trade up for Travion Henderson, blah, 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 blah. And I've seen some people get mad about that because they're like, I can't believe Poles tried to give up a running back to trade up for, or give a pick to trade up for a second round running back, blah, blah. I think you guys need to distinguish between what is basically everyone in the draft, which is constantly making calls to be like, if we wanted to move up, what would the cost be? Mm. Everyone does that. That's not the same thing as a serious offer. And in both cases, Ryan Poles was like, what would it cost if we did this? Got a price and said, well, fuck no, we're not doing that then. I guess if you want the GM who won't even think about trading up for a running back, if you want to pretend that's bad money ball or whatever, that he had the thought, I guess, fine. But like he got the price. He turned down the price correctly, in our opinion. I didn't think it's not that I have some great amount of faith in Ryan Poles' ability. It's just that did not make sense to me as a Ryan Poles move to trade up for Ashton Jonte. It stunk to high heavens right then and there. It stunk with what I think it actually was, which was the Jaguars at 5, or actually it was maybe even the Browns at 5 after they traded down with the Jaguars. It sounded like people trying to raise the value of a trade up, saying, you know, the Bears are interested in this guy. You got to jump ahead of the Raiders if you want to do it. And the Bears have have those 2 second round picks, so that you got to at least offer us your second round pick if you want to move up here. It just felt like an attempt to get someone else to pay that price tag. It was, and also Ryan Poles, for good or ill, like, that guy has had his shit on lockdown leak wise in his time in Chicago over 3 years. I think the only thing where we got a really good wind was happening was Drew Dahlman. Everything else, every highly connected rumor, like, this guy is definitely a future Bear, be it Daron Payne, Khalil Mack again, Trey Smith, none of that happened. None of those, Mike McGlinchey, none of those happened. All those were locks, and then they weren't. They didn't happen. And then people are always surprised by who he actually does end up signing. You know, I don't think anybody had Dio Odengbo being a Bear before free agency started. So that was the other thing I didn't buy, was that if Ryan Poles was even considering this, it wouldn't have leaked like this. It wouldn't be the news of the NFL. Everyone and their mother wouldn't know that it was being discussed. He keeps his shit locked down for them. So that is just a little rant.
Yeah, I mean, he did not say who he was trying to trade up for. He notably did not say he was trying to trade up for Colston Lovelace.
Yeah, I think
last year he was very clear that he was trying to trade up for Roma Dunze.
I think
it was not Loveland. It was someone else.
And I don't even know that I think it was Jonte. I think if they had moved up, they were probably exploring, like, well, what might Will Campbell cost us? What might Kelvin Banks? They probably got word I several people had told me the Saints were pretty. I think I even said it on the live draft cast before they made the pick. I said, I've heard the Saints are interested in Kelvin Banks, too.
I think the idea was to hop over them for Kelvin Banks. I agree.
Yeah, so anyways, that was just my little mini rant there. It just did not make sense to me. And it was I got mad for a couple of reasons that people I was being told I was coping when I was like, no, I'm just rationally sorting. You and I are like, you and I are not even huge Ryan Poles fans, but one thing I think we've managed to do pretty well on this podcast over the years is that we do seem to understand how he thinks. And sometimes it's really fucking stupid. We'll talk about that again in a minute when we get to the fourth round pick. But we know what does sound like a Poles move and what doesn't sound like a Poles move. And trading up for a running back did not sound like a Poles move, and it wasn't.
Yeah, I think he thought about it twice, probably.
Yeah.
But it was like, I'm definitely not going to pay that kind of situation. I think it definitely helped. I mean, you mentioned Travion Henderson. He mentioned specifically he wanted Travion Henderson, but he went before the Bears could pick again. Both of us think that saved us some heartbreak. Neither of us really like Travion Henderson that much.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's like, if you really want to criticize Ryan Poles, I'm just like, that was the running back you wanted? Shit. Yeah,
like
that's where I quibble with him. It's as an evaluator. Like, I think he generally understands draft pick value and positional value and things like that. I've said this several times, but to me, he's a better GM in the macro sense than he is in the micro sense, because he's I don't necessarily think he's a very good scout. And so I'm just like, that running back was your target? I don't know about that, man. Whenever I watch Travion Henderson, all I can think of is Emperor Palpatine. Like, now you will pay the price for your lack of vision.
It would have been a second DeAndre Swift. Just like, we only need one.
Yeah, know? Exactly. Anyway, so no, let's get into the picks that they did make.
Yeah.
So Colston Loveland, we were asked about 10, 15 minutes before the Bears made the pick. We were like, how would you guys feel about a tight end at 10? We both said, basically, I mean, if Kelvin Banks and all is gone, and that means all three tackles are gone, I guess you might as well go tight end. But I sure hope it's Colston Loveland, not Tyler Warren. And that's not... That, folks, is not hindsight. That's not revisionist. You can go back and listen to our offensive skill position thing. We both said if there was a tight end we wanted them to take, it was Colston Loveland, not Tyler Warren. So, Travis, you said there's some picks you really like, some picks you're neutral on, some picks you're questioning. Where does Loveland fall on that? Is he neutral for you? Did you like it?
He's neutral. I'm neutral on Colston Loveland. It's kind of like you said, like, it's really sad that Kelvin Banks went the pick before. I'm glad for Kelvin because he did eventually settle into the range where he should have been picked. There was this huge variance, it seemed like, before the draft where, like, is he going to go top 10 or is he going to fall into, like, the end of the first round? So that's about where he belonged. But once Kelvin went, the Bears were just in no man's land completely. And it was just kind of all right, we're taking the best player available, regardless of position. We're just going to take the guy who's number one on our board. Poles said this after the draft over and over again. He was like, it was just grab the guy at the top of the board. That's who we're picking, because the guys they wanted, who they were going to skip around on their board to take, just kept going a couple of picks before they took him, which is something they stated, which again is why I think they were trying to trade up for Kelvin Banks. We know they were trying to trade up for Travion Henderson. So they just picked the top name on their board, and it was Colston Loveland. And what we learned afterwards from a bunch of national media guys was that a lot of other teams wanted Colston Loveland. A couple even tried to trade up ahead of the Bears to get Colston Loveland. So
would you say that
everyone else agreed as well?
Would you say that any of your feeling of being neutral about this pick is about Colston Loveland himself, or just about the idea of a tight end at 10?
Both. It's just such a bad draft. It's not that I dislike the choice of Colston Loveland, because I do think he was one of the best players available at this time. Obviously, I prefer James Pierce. We all know how much I liked him. I don't really like how much Atlanta paid to
get him. Did you like him as much as the Atlanta Falcons appear to have liked him?
Maybe just draft him earlier in the draft, Atlanta.
Yeah, that was an odd choice. It was an odd decision to make.
But yeah, I think Colston is... I think he's like a high, an early second round talent in a normal draft at tight end. But in this draft, I think he went right where he should have gone, except for maybe our second round pick should have gone there instead. I don't know.
It's really funny. I feel like you're kind of stuck on the philosophy of it, because I feel like if it had somehow been Burden at 10 and Loveland at 39, you'd have been like, that's a damn good draft by Ryan Poole.
You mentioned really this to funny. Me earlier today, and it's so true. If our draft had been Luther Burden at 10 and Colston Loveland at 39, I'd have been like, perfect. Great, like, perfect value for both of those guys. Yeah. That's exactly where I would have taken them.
Yeah, well, and that's why I'm more than neutral on the pick. I'm very positive on the pick. And I think that's because normally I am the spreadsheet guy, I'm the surplus value guy. And yeah, and that's the main argument against a tight end at 10 is the surplus value argument, because it's not that you can't get a good tight end at 10. Most of the tight ends drafted high have been quality tight ends. The problem is they don't, you know, like a TJ Hockenson or whatever. But the problem is that they don't end up often getting extended, et cetera, because they don't produce so much better than an average tight end that it justifies where they were taken. You could get 80 to 90% of the production from a tight end that you get in round two sometimes. And so that doesn't make it worth it, blah, blah, blah. And I get that. And that's, you know, why you're generally ambivalent about a tight end. And I mean, Brock Bauer, we talked about Brock Bowers extensively before last year's draft. And Brock Bowers is a better prospect than Colston Loveland, as high as I am on Loveland as a tight end prospect. And I'll just say, probably my third or fourth highest rated tight end prospect coming out in the last 3-4 years. Bowers clearly number one, though. Bowers is a much better prospect. And the idea of taking Bowers at 9 last year in that draft was insane to me, because wide receiver, clearly a more premium position, and there was talent there to be had. Like passing on Rome Odunze for Austin Booker, or Austin Booker. what the fuck? For Brock Bowers would have been insane. You know, but in this draft, you know, obviously Luther Burden, there's enough question marks about the guy that he fell to 39, so I didn't really have a problem passing on Luther Burden there. You know, we had Nick, God love him, on the draft, and he was like, I mean, wouldn't a B-plus tackle, like, shouldn't you just take the B-plus tackle with that pick anyways? And normally I would agree. I do agree. You should take the B-plus tackle. The B-plus tackles were gone.
Right.
This was a draft that didn't even have an A-plus tackle.
I mean,
it had 3 B-plus tackles, and they were all gone in the first 9 picks.
If you're like really genuinely upset with the Bears about this pick, please remember that the next 5 picks were Michael Williams, Tyler Booker, Kenneth Grant, Tyler Warren, and Jalen Walker. Like, these are all second round talents. We are in the second round of a normal draft right here.
Yeah. I mean, the next offensive lineman off the board was Tyler Booker, who neither of us liked very much. He's guard only.
Middle of the second round.
Usually. I'm not. Yeah, he's just not a guy that I'm a fan of at all. So the next part in the premium position thing is edge. And we didn't like the edge candidates there. You know, James Pierce, obviously. I mean, we would have been happy with James Pierce, obviously. But whatever's going on there, whatever spooked everybody else, he was obviously not a factor for whatever reason. And then once you take James Pierce out, I'm not a Mykel Williams dude at all.
Yeah,
I would have begrudgingly accepted that at 10 over Shamar Stewart, but I didn't like it. I did not want Shamar Stewart. Absolutely not.
Right.
The league actually ended up being a little bit more sensible at Shamar Stewart than I thought they would be. He fell to, what, 16?
17 to the Bengals. The Bengals, man. They're not making good decisions this year or last year. That's for sure.
Good luck to Trey Hendrickson once again. But I didn't like the other edge candidate. Mike Green had sexual assault allegations and fell all the way to the second round. Like, there wasn't, you know. So it's, at this point, it's Loveland. The problem here in terms of surplus value is the surplus value that he has versus other tight ends in the league, in that, like, he's basically already a top 10 salary at the tight end position so that kind of stinks. Mm-hmm. He's not going to outperform. He's not going to provide the rookie surplus value that you would normally expect for a position. But in terms of surplus value versus other players in this draft, it's hard for me to make the argument that there was a better pick they could have made in that moment that offered more value there. And so when I drop my objections to the idea of just using a number 10 on a tight end in general, because I don't think they're really applicable in this year's draft like they normally would be. Like I said, the perfect contrast, Brock Bowers last year, better prospect, way better draft, wouldn't even have thought, would have been furious with Brock Bowers, who we both knew was going to be a stud and is a stud.
Yep. Oh, it was undeniable.
Was never about Brock Bowers. It was about the position he plays and the value of that draft pick. In this year's draft, the value of the draft pick was a lot lower, so taking the tight end made sense. And so when I take the philosophical argument against the position and all that away, I'm left with just the player, and I'm very excited about the player. I would say, let me look at this. I sent you the numbers earlier today because I had been crunching them myself, and I like to look at – people get caught up on the counting stats, and obviously Tyler Warren had much more impressive counting stats this year. But I like to look at – especially for the situation Colston Loveland's in, I like to look at yards per route run, and I like to look at, you know, PFF receiving grade. I like to try to look at these isolated things that really just show, like, how did this guy do when he was actually given the chance to run a route, when his team actually threw the ball? How did he do when the situations were entirely under his control? And so I looked at – you know, a couple different tight end prospects over the last couple of years, looked at their last 2 years in college, their receiving grade and their yards per route run. Tyler Warren, if you average his last 2 years together, so not just his one breakout year at age 23 or whatever, Tyler Warren averaged a 79.6 grade and he averaged 2.1 yards per route run at tight end. Colston Loveland averaged 85.6 grade and a 2.53 yards per route run. And now the 2.53 is very good, folks, for a tight end. To put that in context, Brock Bowers' last 2 years, his yards per route run was 2.51. Basically, the only two guys that topped Colston Loveland as tight end prospects in terms of yards per route run are Trey McBride, who has finally blossomed into a very good tight end in the NFL now that he's gotten a full year to play with a healthy Kyler Murray, and Kyle Pitts, who obviously had a great receiving rookie year, but was always a glorified wide receiver. That was always going to be the problem with Kyle Pitts. It was obvious in college, this dude does not block. He's a big wide receiver. I don't think Colston Loveland's a big wide receiver. I think he's a real tight end. You know, another guy that had marginally similar to better receiving grade was Dalton Kincaid. And again, you can go back a couple years and listen to us talk about Dalton Kincaid. I don't think Dalton Kincaid is really a tight end. He's a slow wide receiver. I don't think Colston Loveland is a slow wide receiver. I think he's an actual tight end who can separate. That's a rare skill set. We've seen what Ben Johnson can do with a similar player in Sam Laporta. And to be clear, I have a slightly higher grade on Colston Loveland than I had on Sam Laporta, who I was very high on. I know you don't. I fucking know you don't, you Iowa Hawkeye son of a bitch. I know that.
I think that's borne itself out at this point, like how good Sam Laporta is. Yeah.
Well, I mean, but we haven't had a chance to let Colston Loveland born itself out yet. You can't okay. Scoreboard. You can't scoreboard based on what one guy's done in the NFL. The other
how good Sam Laporta is. Yeah.
I like Sam Laporta.
I think you are you're very excited about this pick, and I approve of that. I'm not shitting on the pick, but I see as many reasons to be excited as I do to temper my enthusiasm with Colston Loveland. He's hurt. He's missing OTAs already. I don't love the pre-injured guy. I know the injury is not like he tore both rotator cuffs or something. He should come back healthy. I don't love it. He's not a complete tight end yet. All right. He can block, but he's also not a guy who's probably going to be blocking in line a ton, which is fine because in Ben Johnson's scheme, he's not going to be. Cole Kmet will be in line most of the time if he needs that kind of thing. He can separate, like he is really fast for a tight end. That's a nice skill set. It's just kind of like, all right, that's how I feel about the pick. All right. Like, sure. Yeah. That, like, I'm not going to be against it. What I told you earlier today is I don't think we're going to remember he was the first round pick. Not that he's not going to be a Bear. Not that, oh, we're going to forget Colston Loveland. But I think coming out of this draft, we're going to be like, oh, that was the Luther Burden draft. Right. And then we're going to be like, oh, fucking wait, we took Loveland first. Yeah.
Well, and what I had said going into the draft was I said, I think with how weirdly similar the first and second round talent pool was in this year's draft, and not necessarily in a good way, I said, I'm not really necessarily judging this draft on the first round pick like I would in a lot of years. I want to see what they walk away with by the end of the second round. Like, what's the cluster of players?
We had we had a great comment during the draft cast, which from one of the viewers, which was that there were 50 guys in this draft who should have been taken somewhere in the 30s.
Yeah, in a normal there were 50 draft. Guys in this draft that should be the 30th overall pick. Right. And I was like, yeah, that's perfectly described.
That's exactly what this draft was.
Yeah. And yeah, so I mean, if you look at the collection of Colston Loveland, Luther Burden, Ozzie Trapio, and I guess they ended up sneaking in Shamar Turner, I guess it was also a second round pick, wasn't he, because of the trade. So that foursome, you know, is it the exact tackle that we, I feel a little bad that we talked about, we had that incredible offensive line episode with Quinn. I don't know that Ozzie Trapio came up once. I don't think he was mentioned.
I'm frustrated that he was so far down people's big boards that I never watched him before, because pretty good tape from Ozzie Trapio. Yeah.
Well, and he was a guy that I had heard from a couple people before the draft. I hadn't looked at him. But I had heard from a couple people before the draft that were like, NFL offensive line guys are much higher on Ozzie Trapio than just general mock draft guys. Like, Ozzie Trapio has the things that NFL teams really look for. I that's a good pick. I went and watched him just like you did. I was like, the hand usage is good. I think the hand usage, I think, is reflected in, because people have pointed out a lot how few penalties he had. He was like one of the least penalized offensive linemen in all of college football the last year. He only had like 5 penalties and something like 1,400 snaps.
You remember last year when I was so upset about Olufoshanu, and I was just like, his hands are all wrong. He is going to draw penalties. Like, you need to use your hands better. This is a dude who just textbook. He's like Paris Johnson Jr. I haven't seen it since Paris. He has long arms and he bends with the upper body, which is rare. It's a rare trait.
And that's what I was trying to say. Like, the hand usage, I think, is reflected in the lack of penalties. And usually that those two things go hand in hand. If you got a guy that's almost never flagged, it's because he knows how to use his hands.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, so I'm happy with the, and like, is Shamar Turner necessarily the most exciting prospect? But we said in this draft, it's just pick your flavor of, is he a defensive end? Is he a defensive tackle? He's a hybrid. He can do this. He can do that.
He's an exciting pick in some ways.
Yeah, we just said that they needed to come out of this draft with a warm body with some promise on the defensive line. They need to come out of this draft with a second round offensive lineman that they can develop into something. I think Ozzie qualifies for that. They need to come out of this draft with a tight end. Well, we didn't really say they needed to come out of this draft with a wide receiver. We thought they needed a running back, which they did get later. But you know, when Luther Burden's on the board at 39, you do exactly what the Bears did. You sprinted to the fucking podium.
I mean, we talked in our skill position preview, where we were like, what if we just take Luther Burden at 10? And we were both like, oh, absolutely. Like, I mean, he fits right in. He'd be the perfect slot on this team. It moves DJ Moore over to the one again. It's Roma Dunze at the X. Like, it's perfect. The team works perfectly that way. So yeah, if we take Luther Burden at 10, that's great. We both love it. And then magically, we get him at 39 because this year he had an awful quarterback. And so his numbers fell off. And apparently, word is he basically told this quarterback and his offensive coordinator and allowed his frustrations to be known with the state of the Missouri offense, and that dropped him down the board.
Yeah, wide receiver did wide receiver shit, not concerned at all. Well, and very different kinds of wide receivers, but I said that I was like, this is so much like Alshon Jeffrey. It's spooky in terms of how the Bears got. Yeah, because you and I both laughed through the entire 2012 draft process with Alshon Jeffrey, because they were like, what did he lose his motivation? Is he a problem? Is he this? Is he that? And I was like, their quarterback was ass.
Yeah.
Just put on the goddamn tape and watch.
He
was
throwing him the pounds ball. Yeah, and his quarterback was terrible. That's what happened.
What are you, like, come on. Like, I don't understand. Like, they want these kids to be saints, where it's like, if you're a wide receiver and the guy, and you are, and it's college, you're better than everyone around you. Luther Burden is open nonstop, and the guy just fucking can't get him the ball. Yeah, you're going to get frustrated. And the Bears have an Antoine Randall. People credit him really with getting Jamison Williams to finally lock in this year. That he's got a reputation for being very, very disciplined, very good, getting guys to buy in. And this is something that I talked about a lot with Eberflus, where I was like, if you're going to sell me on this guy as this great leader of men, that our competitive advantage is that he's a leader of men, then you need to be taking a chance on these character risk guys. He's got that because he's supposed to be able to mold them. That's what the Steelers do. Hmm. Mike Tomlin takes these problem wide receivers. He gets 5 years out of them. And then when they demand a big paycheck and go crazy, he hands them off to someone else, and he just takes the next one. You know, right now they're floating George Pickens out there. It's just what they do. This is what you should do. If you believe that you have a great coach in Ben Johnson and an Antoine Randle, that you have these guys that can get guys to buy in, then take the incredibly talented guy in Luther Burden that the rest of the league is getting themselves spooked over, take him and make him into something.
Yeah, it's so funny because you know exactly what the conversation was and exactly why Luther Burden was frustrated, because he was the best wide receiver prospect in that class of high schoolers. He was the number one wide receiver prospect. Prior to this season, Luther Burden was seen as a top five pick. He was seen as far and away the best wide receiver. He was seen as, like, you know, top dog in a shitty class. And as he started to fall, you know that he was in their ear like, you are costing me money. Like, every week, every practice, you are costing me money. And of course, that's exactly what happened, right? Like, he fell to pick 39 when he should have been in the top 10, without a doubt.
Yeah, when you can't, It's I hate when you punish these kids for not being able for being honest.
Just being like, "Hey, you're like this is you my want future."
Them, I get it. You want him to fake humble himself and be like, "Well, I could have worked harder. I know, blah blah blah." But no, I mean, he was like, "Look at my situation. It was ass. Like, I can't throw myself the ball, guys. It is what it is." So
this is how you talk yourself into Matthew Golden. Over Luther Burden, right? If you're Green Bay, you're like, well, he had Quinn Ewers and he never told him to go fuck himself, so he must be a saint.
exactly. And, you know, and I will say one thing about the Luther Burden pick. I feel like everybody wants their GM to do the smart thing on paper until they see the results of it and they don't get all the boxes checked that they want, because there's so much frustration from Bears Twitter and Bears fans that they did not walk away with a running back and everything like that. But it's like, if you had asked these same people for the most part before the draft, like, what do you want Ryan Poles to do? Should he trade up to secure a running back? Every single one of them would have said, fuck no. Ryan Poles needs to stop trading away picks. He needs to be patient. He needs to be disciplined. You know, take best player available, even if it's not at your biggest position of need. Everybody always loves to say that shit, and then when it happens, they get mad. Now, I'm not saying Ryan Poles actually did take the best player available at every slot in this draft. You can quibble with their actual evaluations. But the fact of the matter is, once Travion Henderson was off the board, and if we're all in agreement that we don't want Ryan Poles giving up actual picks that matter to go get a running back, and I don't think we do.
No.
Then Luther Burden was clearly the best prospect available at 39. You run that card and you don't fucking think about it. And then you just live with the consequences. Okay?
And that's what Ryan Poole said, you know, after the draft. He was like basically what was left of our big board was Luther Burden off there all by himself, and then a whole bunch of space, and then, you know, some other people down here. There was no question. It was why is he still here? You know?
Right. And then after, you know, and then speaking of the running back thing, I think after pick 39, when the Bears picked pick 39, the next running back taken wasn't taken until like pick 60. And then the next running back taken after that guy wasn't until like pick 85. Yeah. So now the league individually is stupid. GMs individually are stupid. We talk a lot about how as an aggregate, the league does tend to get things right in terms of like first rounders outperform second rounders, outperform third rounders. So like the league was telling you there was not a back that was collectively deemed worth a second round grade at the time that the Bears were picking in the second round. There was not a running back that was deemed worth, I guess, Shamar Turner as a third round pick, but I guess technically he was a late second. There was not a running back worth that pick, you know? So would you have really been happier if he'd drafted Caleb Johnson a whole round early versus where the league actually valued him, just so that you can check the box? And because I get it, fans, you know, you're making your lineup for week one and you're wondering who's going to start at running back. And it's not that I'm not curious about that, I guess, but like we've said for so many years, the draft is not about finding year one starters if you can avoid it. You want to put yourself in a position where when a Luther Burden is there at 39, you can just say, holy shit, this is awesome, let's just take him.
Yeah.
Instead of being tied to a position that you need. And if you had passed on Luther Burden to take a running back in this fucking draft, I could tell this entire pod, this episode right here would be nothing but me ranting about that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, it means you don't have a quick immediate answer to the running back question. But I would trust Ben Johnson and what should be a damn good offensive line to figure out how to create rushing production over wasting the chance to take fucking Luther Burden when he's there at 39. That is gift wrap. That is the kind of pick you see the Packers or Patriots of your make, and you're just like, how the fuck did the league let that team get that guy at 39? But for once, that pick happens for us, and all I see some people bitching about is, who's going to be the running back?
It's going to take, my prediction is going to take, at most 4 weeks before people forget all of that, and they're like, Luther Burden, steal of the draft. Like, how did we get this motherfucker? He's playing in such a nice high-volume spot in the Ben Johnson offense, because the thing that Luther Burden is best at is catching the ball 3 yards off the line of scrimmage and then running off with it. And that's all he's going to be asked to do in this offense. You know, if it's so perfect, and the upside of Luther is a number one wide receiver, it's one day slotting into that role. So you've got a guy who locks in right now, immediately, maybe in one of the best spots for a rookie wide receiver that I could remember. And hope for the future. It's an insane pick. You can't quibble with Luther Burden at number 39. It's fantastic.
Well, and it I also think it puts pressure in the best way on DJ Moore to get his shit right. Because the comp that I honestly had for Luther Burden was DJ Moore. But I do think you can also...
Absolutely, it is.
DJ Moore kind of has two separate skill sets. He's got the kind of the short yardage yak creation that Shane Waldron did a little too damn much of. And he's also got the deep threat aspect, which for whatever reason, the Bears and Caleb just could not ever get the deep passing game going. And I think you can have Luther Burden be more the short yardage yak version of DJ Moore while you have DJ Moore be the more vertical threat DJ Moore option. So I think those two fit well together, but it's also pressure on DJ Moore to shape up. And I think DJ Moore should recognize that. I also think DJ Moore, you know, we really tried to avoid for as long as we could hammering the guy for it. But the effort he put in last year was inexcusable. The fact that they went out of their way to extend him a year early last summer, and he still didn't make it to week 2. And I get it. Shane Waldron was obviously an idiot from the jump. You were already frustrated by then. I get it. But you cannot be showing up your rookie quarterback in week 2 after the franchise extended you like that. It clearly told you you're a building block. You're safe no matter what happens. Don't get frustrated. That was bullshit. And I think he needs to realize that right now people might be giving him a little bit of a pass because sure, he got tired of Matt Eberflus and Shane Waldron, but the reputation that Ben Johnson has around the league is very different. And if you can't make it work with Ben Johnson and Antoine Randall-El, the next team that takes you isn't going to be looking at you as a wide receiver one. Probably they're going to be looking at you as a reclamation and project and a prove it thing. So DJ Moore needs to be really smart about his actions from here too. And that's, I think, a good way to push him is to just add a guy like Luther Burden and be like, look, man, we've got options. Do you?
Yeah. I mean, on the other side of that thing, I have seen some people already and some articles being written about.
Yeah, to get rid of him right
Moore,
now.
DJ Moore be traded? Oh, here's a great trade for DJ Moore. This is not the time to replace DJ Moore. Even if that were the plan, even if that were an option in the future, I don't think this next draft is the draft. But the one after that, fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. So DJ Moore is with us for a while now. He's got that contract in. He's fully guaranteed to be, a Bears receiver here. But like you said, the amount of pouting that was done last year was ridiculous. The amount of quitting on routes was insane. And it's stuff you didn't even see that from DJ Moore with his parade of shit quarterbacks in Carolina. So yeah, like you said, if he's going to do that same shit with Ben Johnson, and Antoine Randall-El, maybe you do think about jettisoning him, but not right now. Slow your roll, folks. Chill out. I'm hoping DJ turns back into DJ Moore here now that he has like the best offensive coordinator in the league for a head coach. Do we want to talk any more about Ozzie Trapia? We're both pretty excited about it. We didn't get too in depth on it. Are we content to leave it for now at this is an exciting prospect, or do we want to dig into what everybody's talking about with like, where should he play? Should we move Darnell Wright? Is Braxton going to be ready to start the season, or do we want to leave that for later?
Yeah, I don't understand being like, you've created a surplus at this position for one, so let's immediately get rid of it. It feels like people are just way too concerned with setting the lineup. Then just thinking of the long-term health of the organization, which again, as a fans, you're focused on the next season, but like it's almost like we have a GM for once doing some actual long-term thinking and people can't handle it.
So yeah. Agreed.
Like, yeah. Well, and I mean,
like, chill out. We have, you're exactly right. I mean, this is really what we wanted, right? Add in the trenches, add another guy on the offensive line, even if he doesn't need to start right away, add another guy on the defensive line, even if we already have our defensive end guy. Like,
yeah. And they added in, I'm already blanking on his name. The guy from Michigan State, in the sixth round, you know, not to be super excited about a sixth round pick, but they added a guy that Poles usually doesn't add. He's not a super amazing athlete. He's not like a super young prospect. He's not a guy with tackle upside. They just drafted an interior offensive lineman with a ton of experience who can hopefully step in a pinch. I was actually happy to see him use a draft pick on that for once, because he usually doesn't do that.
Yeah. So Luke Newman. Yeah. I mean, one of the things we asked about before this draft was, hey, Ryan, you tend to hit on these offensive linemen you pick. Like, just do it more. Just do it in every draft, dude. Like, pick the guys you like, and it seems like he did that in this draft.
Yeah. Okay, so we've talked about Burden. We've talked about Loveland, obviously. I feel like we also talked about Ozzie Trapio a little bit and how we feel about him. Good pick there. Do you have any feelings on Shamar Turner other than just – I'm at, like, at that point in the draft, I like the kid's talent. I'm not going to sit here and say, he's going to be this or that. I will say Dennis Allen has a history of using tweener guys like him. Yeah. He's the same kind of theory as the other Shamar from Texas A&M. He's just that theory at pick 62, where I'm a lot more comfortable experimenting with it than at pick 10. So
I think he's a super interesting pick.
You
know, a guy who played inside this year, he's not going to play inside for the Bears, at least not most of the time. This is a guy who got shoved inside because Nick Scarton transferred in, because Shamar Stewart was, you know, wrecking shit on the other side without ever getting a sack. So they said, hey, like, play the three tech and you'll still start. So that's what he did. But he's not a natural. Oh, my God. He's not a natural three technique. So I think he's going to be the defensive end in this system. And we've already talked about this with Dennis Allen. He does not necessarily want the James Pierce type at defensive end. He doesn't want the sack machine there. He wants a very strong run defender who can also generate pressure. It's that token pressure we talked about last year. He's going to generate pressure in different ways, right? It doesn't have to be all on the edge. And this guy is, Shamar Turner's kind of perfect for that. Like, 2 years ago when he was playing edge at Texas A&M, he had 10.5 sacks. He's very good at generating pressure off the edge. He's a really strong run defender, very strong guy. The downside on Shamar Turner is he is an angry man. He is very bad at controlling his emotions. He is the successor to Vontaze Burfict in more ways than one. And he has a very clear picture of him punching a man directly in the balls for playing football. So he is the king of unsportsmanlike conduct penalties. The only reason I knew who Shamar Turner was, isn't that the unsportsmanlike guy? Yes, that's who it was. So that, and you mentioned this earlier, like, if you're going to be an NFL head coach, you can't be shying away from these character guys. This is part of your job. And the Bears took two of them in this draft. This is a big one, though. This guy needs somebody, some veteran leadership, to be like, you cannot let that spill out.
who better than Dennis Allen? You know, yeah. Like Dennis Allen is as respected of an NFL defensive mind as they come. This guy's been a head coach twice. This is a guy, I mean, he's known as being a bit of a hard ass. Like, honestly, a lot of this staff is known for being very, you know,
which
not
is
necessarily.
Great, guess what? We've already got one guy in the secondary who needs somebody to slap him.
Not necessarily like Bill Belichick or like a Matt Patricia level, but like these guys, these are known for being very task oriented, very detail oriented. Guys, and yeah, that's like I said with Fluss so many times, like you've gotta, this should, if you're gonna tell me this bullshit about you being a great leader, which, and I said that because I didn't buy it about Eberflus, because the minute I heard that man talk, I was like, that's a fucking cornball, don't try to sell me that cornball is not a cornball. And then everything that came out as he was getting fired, all the leagues were like, the players couldn't stand this completely fake cornball. And I was like, I know, no one can, because it comes off immediately as a fake ass cornball. But I kept hitting that point because I'd be like, you don't even believe your own propaganda about this guy. Because if you did believe that this guy was this great leader, this great culture guy, you would be taking chances on these dudes.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't, other than Chase Claypool of all people, which was hilarious. So this is a staff where it's like, okay, you do believe that if you hand Ben Johnson a wide receiver with an attitude, and if you hand Dennis Allen, you know, a defensive I'm just going to call him a defensive lineman. I don't even know if he's going to be edge or tackle. In Dennis Allen's history, he's used guys all over. I think he falls into that Curtis Granderson. Obviously, not to compare him to a guy who's going to go into the fucking Hall of Fame. He's going to play the Cam Jordan position, which is to say that he's not going to have a set position.
I was like, Curtis Granderson, that's the wrong sport. What are you talking about?
Wait, hold on. Who's the... Carl Granderson. Jesus Christ.
I was like, Curtis Granderson. Damn, Carl Granderson. I haven't thought of it in a little while.
Curtis Granderson, who was like a Cub for 8 years until it finally happened, and he actually ended up a Cub when we didn't want him anymore.
That's right.
No, Carl Granderson. I'm sorry. Okay. No, Carl Granderson. He's in that mold of like a Carl Granderson, where he's like big, long arms. The kind of guy that Dennis Allen likes as a body type for his...
Yeah.
For these... And like I said... That was the argument people were making for Shamar Stewart at 10s. Like, Dennis Allen has a history with these guys. I mean, Dennis Allen has a history of taking these guys in the second round. That's a whole different story. Dennis Allen has a history of taking these guys later and developing them.
Yeah.
That is very different than using the 10th overall pick on one. And so I'm happy with this. Is it going to work out? I don't know. But this is the case where you say, like, the traits are here. The versatility is here. We have the defensive coach who's known for using guys like this. Fuck it. Let's roll the dice. At 62, yes. At 62, after you traded down and made that pick appear out of thin air, that's exactly where you take this chance. And in this draft, this is the chance you got to take. So, I guess Shamar Stewart is a case where, or Shamar Turner is a case where, like, the actual prospect, I don't know, he's like a B... prospect, but the process and the thinking behind the pick, that I'm excited about. Whereas, you know, Colston Loveland, we might not love the surplus value or the philosophy, but I love the player. Mark Turner, I don't know that I love the player, but I like the pick. I like the idea there. Like, that's what you should be doing in that part of the draft. That's what the guy you should be giving to Dennis Allen. And then let's move on to the next pick they made.
Let's talk about
that. Let's talk about the... Now, when you would talk about Ryan Poles being stupid, folks.
Yeah.
Ruben Hippolyte.
Pick. He
picked so fucking
Vance Jones Jr. This might be the stupidest pick he's ever made.
The Bayless, he picked the Bayless. I'm glad you mentioned Bayless Jones, because this is literally it. This is the Bayless Jones of defensive players. You took a guy who, the thing is, at first I was like, oh, he must be an insane athlete. That RAS score must go crazy. But it really doesn't. Just like Bayless Jones, the RAS, this is a man with straight line speed. Ryan Poles is sometimes very complicated. He's sometimes got nuance and layers and subtlety to everything he does. Sometimes he really thinks about things, and other times he just sees a guy who's big run faster than he should be able to, and he just locks in.
Yeah,
and that's all that happened here. I'm not going to try to defend this pick. I'm still laughing.
This is a terrible pick. It's stupid. This is the worst pick.
And to be clear, it's a terrible pick, even if it works out. And if it works out, I think it's going to work out because he's going to be like a useful special teams player.
This
but,
is
like,
a special teams pick. They used the fourth round pick to grab a special teamer.
Which, I mean, last year they used it on a punter, and then before that they used a third rounder on fucking Bayless Jones.
That's a good point.
they like to take their special. They like to use a fourth rounder on a special. And maybe there's a philosophy there, I guess, because Noah Sewell was a fifth rounder, and he's been a special teams, a good special teams player for them while adding basically nothing else. So maybe there is some value in you use a fourth or fifth round pick on these guys, and you do get a couple years out of them as opposed to a fourth or fifth round pick on a project player who ends up being absolutely nothing. But at the same time, you can still whiff on these picks. And if you whiff, like you did with Valus Jones, it's the dumbest fucking pick of all time. Because the Valus Jones pick, you know they talked themselves into the Valus Jones pick by saying, like, well, if nothing else, he can be a really great returner. And then he wasn't even that. Yeah. So, like, if you spent this pick on Ruben Hippolyte and he isn't suddenly the best gunner in the NFL, and he might not be, you can miss just as easily on that as anything. If he's not, then it's like, this is so fucking stupid.
I fully expect us to see him make a bunch of embarrassing missed tackles on punt
coverage. Oh, yeah. It has to just... like.
It's so dumb. This is such a stupid pick.
I think I've mentioned Arif Hassan many times on the blog. He's a guy I really like to read. He does a lot of really good football data stuff. He does the consensus big board every year where he aggregates all of the different... He does the consensus of the consensus, basically. He aggregates the Athletic's consensus big board and a couple other places' consensus big boards. It's just the master big board. And every year he keeps track of... which team is the first team to take a player that's not even on the consensus big board, which goes up to 300 players.
Yeah.
I believe Ruben was 367. So the Bears were the first team to do it this year, a dubious honor. And again, individual player evaluations, individual GMs can be stupid, but the NFL, as we said, as a whole, does broadly aggregate these guys fairly well. These picks that are not even on the board when you make them so rarely work out. So I'm not going to defend the process here after just defending the process of Shamar Turner, which I loved. This was just a stupid pick. And this is the kind of stupid that Ryan Poles is when he falls in love with just a fucking athlete, a project, a metric at something. When he falls in love with that, gets tunnel vision, locks it. That's the kind of stupid Ryan and Poles is. And convinces himself that he's seeing something no one else sees. He did it with Valus. He's doing it here. Like, it's just so... it's so stupid that I can't even be mad about it because it's so fucking funny. I laughed out loud.
As it came across the board, I was like, I don't recognize that name at all. And then immediately everybody was like, well, that fucking guy wasn't going to get drafted. Okay. Is he fast?
Yeah. And that was one of the first things I saw was, I think it was Dane Brugler who was like, a couple weeks ago, I would have definitely said this guy wasn't getting drafted, but the 4.42 at his pro day really changed that. And I'm like, if all a guy had to do was run a 4.42 at his pro day to go from undrafted to just don't do that. Like, the 40 time should not make that much of a difference, guys.
Yeah.
At least not. I mean, if a 4.42 40 had turned him into a seventh rounder, fine. Like, whatever. But the fourth fucking round?
The less said about that, the better. Except for to laugh at it over the next couple of years.
Now, I think they would have taken either Bashel Tootin or Scadabo if they had fallen to them there. But again, it seemed like teams were very deliberately sniping running backs in front of the Bears, knowing the Bears were interested in a running back.
Yep.
And that's the price you pay for Ryan Poles showing the kind of discipline that we've criticized him for not showing before. So, like, if you want, you say, oh, I want him to show discipline and I want him to do the surplus value and do things right. He did.
You know what, NFL teams, I'm disappointed that guys can fall like Luther Burden to 39th just because he's upset with his quarterback, but a guy like Cam Scadabo can't, like, rise up draft boards because he was out there throwing up on the sidelines and then running back in a fucking playoff game. Like, he doesn't get any credit for that. He still goes that late.
Well, I do think the Bears got dime store Scadabo in Kyle Manonga.
That's what I was going to say.
Like,
they got a muscle hamster. They got 5'8", 215-pound Kyle Manonga.
I will say this about him. I think his pass blocking gets him on the roster. Like, just there.
Is Travis Homer still on the team? Or
They did keep Travis Homer. I think Travis Homer's...
Yeah, he's probably fucked, because, like, Roschon Johnson is still a great pass blocker.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe he's a good pass blocker and a better goal line back, and then he makes the team over Roschon.
Right, that is... I mean, but that's the thing that stood out when I watched him, is that, you know, muscle hamster, bully ball. Fans are going to love that in the preseason for sure, but the pass blocking, legitimately great, legitimately pro-ready there. So that's always nice to see.
Yeah. I have nothing to say about Zah Frazier.
I mean, that's other than I'm a little proud of Ryan Poles there, because that's a guy that metrics wise, and I mean in both kinds of metrics, in terms of his physical attributes, that guy that big running that fast at corner, nice. But also statistically, he had very good coverage stats this year. Normally a guy that I don't think Ryan Poles would look at because he's 25 years old, but at that point in the draft, you know what, man, take a chance on the straights. I like that pick. Do I think he's going to become anything? No, the default stance of the Scottcast is that we don't count on fifth round picks or later becoming anything until they do. But like, yeah, that's a fair swing. I mean, if I'm going to bash him for the Hippolyte pick, and I will, that I think Frazier's a fair swing.
Yeah.
And just, you know, and just to get, I've already forgotten his name, fucking name again.
It's Luke Newman.
Luke Newman. Anyways, I think Juke Berman, I think that's a good pick that Ryan Poles made, where, you know, he's like, oh, he's evolving a little bit. He took a chance on an interior offensive lineman with some experience instead of going for a project dude. Good for him. So overall, yeah, I mean, I don't know that we don't like to give letter grades on drafts anyways, but I think, especially this is a C+ draft as a whole in terms of the talent pool. So I don't know that an A is even possible, but I wasn't mad at this draft. The Hippolyte pick is the only indefensibly stupid decision that was made. And so I guess when you're talking the Chicago Bears, one indefensibly stupid decision in a draft is pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, a fine first round pick, an incredible steal at 39, and then, you know, a couple of really good, interesting depth pieces who have like high upside and fell for one reason or another. Trapillo, I think just because people didn't really know about him, he actually rose up draft boards late. And then Turner, because he's a real hothead and people probably didn't want to deal with that. So I thought, like, especially given how crap this draft was overall, like, the Bears came out of it looking really good. One of the better drafts in the NFL, I would say, just, you know, before we see everybody play, obviously. But yeah, just really well done. Nobody's touching the Patriots in this draft. Great job by New England drafting this year, but definitely in that next tier of drafts. The teams that failed in this draft, anybody who traded up into the first round, you fucked up. Jacksonville, that was horrible. Atlanta, why are you giving up first round picks next year? The Giants, oh, you like Jaxton Dart that much, do you? That's my opinion on this draft overall. If you didn't make a trade up, you did great. So go Bears. You traded back a bunch of times, still got some good players. Yeah, I would say overall I'm pretty pleased. You agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Hell yeah. All right, well, I guess that concludes our coverage of the 2025 NFL draft. Do we have any closing thoughts on this? You know, this is usually kind of a sad time. We don't get to talk about the draft now for like 9 months or so.
Yeah, this draft was just not a good one. I'm hoping next year's draft is better. I'm also hoping the Bears are like picking in the 20s in it, and it's like we get to take a wide view of an actually interesting class worth talking about. This year's draft was just, it is what it is. But I think I wouldn't say they made the best of a bad situation, but they didn't make a bad situation worse in terms of what was available in this draft. So
yeah, you heard it here first, folks. Bears picking 32nd next year. Hopefully, you know, just a great safety falls to us at 32 next year.
I guess, do we care that they didn't get any safeties? I kind of did expect them to take a safety somewhere, and they didn't take any, so.
Yeah, I guess they didn't need a safety. I've always kind of felt like Terrell Smith is eventually just going to slip back into safety at some point, but yeah. He looked so good at corner this last year, and Tyreek looked so bad that may not
happen. I wonder if you try Tyreek Stevenson at safety at some point, maybe. Give it some playing camp. All right. Well, we'll see you next week, maybe? I'm not sure what we're going to talk about, but
yeah,
maybe.
We'll all see right. you next week. We'll make some bullshit up.
Oh, oh hell yeah.
We're starting our off-season stuff, Kyle. We're just going to talk about random bullshit.
We haven't decided if there's going to be a tournament this year or what we're going to do. We have some ideas. We've floated some concepts. We have concepts of a plan, but...
We are now all peeking right. our heads out of the draft bunker to see Let's what see. There is.
What's left in the wastelands. All right, later, folks. Way out on that bumper's road. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago, and people I sure do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.